Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Retiring from competitive sport can be one of the toughest transitions for athletes. So after years of packed schedules, a wide support network, adjusting to life outside of the spotlight, I'm sure can be challenging. Well, we're going to find out exactly how challenging it can be because I'm joined in the studio now by some of Ireland's greatest sporting stars to discuss their own journey through retirement and how they've navigated this new chapter. So we have Olympic boxing gold medalist Michael Carruth, former Irish international footballer Stephanie Zambra, Annalise Murphy, silver medalist in sailing at the Olympics, and Jason Smith, who is a six-time gold medal winner at the Paralympics. Thank you all for being here. It's great to have you. Now, where to start? Steph, you might begin with you because you're our most recent retiree. How are you getting on?
Yeah, good. To be honest, it's been probably more busy than I've ever been since I retired. I obviously had a long career. I would have started playing football professionally at a higher level when I was about 16, maybe, in terms of senior football. So coming to the decision to retire wasn't easy, but thankfully I've had opportunities to get into coaching, which has kind of kept me involved. I'm still on the grass, I'm still involved at a high level. I've been coaching with the Irish under-17s girls with James Scott and his staff, and recently took up a role as a senior coach with Colly O'Neill and Shamrock Rovers. So I've been kept busy.
So you're right in the middle of it So does that mean you feel okay about everything?
Yeah, I think it's funny because I keep getting asked by the girls, because a lot of the girls that I'm coaching at the moment, they would have played with last season. So they keep saying they're dying to get back in. Like, and I think we've got our first game this Saturday. So maybe when the few games start, then maybe it might hit in. But at the moment, I'm happy doing what I'm doing. I think I've always been someone who... like, I was asked previously, would I be a player coach? And I always said no, because I wouldn't like to be doing a bit of both. I'd rather be fully focused on one thing. And right now that's the coaching, so I'm happy to be doing that.
And Michael, for you, I mean, you've been coaching now for a long time, but do you still feel you'd love to be in the middle there when the bell goes?
Yeah, you've got that competitive in you. You know, you always think, I could be him, I could be him. Now, you know, you're putting yourself in scenarios where you can't beat them anymore. The body's not there anymore. And it's always in your head that you can do it. But again, like, I had it. A 23-year career, boxing career. It was a good one. You know, I done well in it. And again, the next phase is obviously, do I go into coaching? And I went into coaching. My dad told me, take 6 months off boxing. It lasted 3 weeks and I was back in the club, you know what I mean? And that was it. He let me stay on. And now I'm the head coach of Drimna. We work now through the Dublin City Council and the IABA. We have a thing called the Startbox Programme. And it was initially given us a contract for 3 years, but we're on our 15th year now because the kids love it, the schools love it. And it's great that I'm going to teaching absolute beginners. Boxing.
What age are they coming into?
Well, we train them from anywhere from 5 years old up to TYs, you know. And in schools, we have our own boxing club. We have an academy on Sunday mornings. We have from three to 7 years old. And these are the stepping stones. This is where we have to get them at this age, you know, to reproduce the Kellys and Katies and Michaels.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get them at six 7 years old.
Really, that young?
It brings the discipline, it brings the whole 9 yards into it from that age. And once we get them at that age, they'll become champions.
And just going back to what you said there about your dad telling you to take 6 months off, you went back in after 3 weeks. Do you remember what that was like and how you felt at the time going back in?
Yeah, I knew my time was up. You know, I was 30 years old and boxing, and that's quite old to be, believe it or not, as a male boxer. You know, it's, and I'd done five and a half years of professional boxing. The professional boxing wasn't anything like the amateur boxing, because once you lose a fight in a professional game, they just don't want to know you. You know what I mean? In the amateur game, you just pick yourself up, dust yourself off and go again, you know. And with my dad, he said, take the time off. And I said, yeah, okay. But he knew
you
I'd
couldn't
be back
stay
in 2 weeks
away.
Time or 3 weeks. And it was 3 weeks and I was back in the gym.
Yeah.
And I loved the idea of being the coach rather than being the boxer.
Yeah. Well, you're doing it long enough now, I suppose, to be well used to that side of things, you know.
And it's great that, you know, I want to produce another Olympic champion. You know?
Have you got one?
I've got one in mind.
Have you?
I'm not going to give you a
name. I wouldn't push you, but it's, as long as you have that person.
If I ever get up the heavenly gates and all that, I'm going to have two to beat me dad.
And Jason beside you there as well. I mean, I spoke about the structure. I mean, that must be a huge thing. Everything pretty much is planned out for you and then it's not.
Yeah, and it's... again, if I reflect, I retired just short of 2 years ago. In one way, making the decision was easy. The time felt right. The opportunity for me to step into a role at Paralympics Ireland around their strategy and how you shape where the organisation was going, all those pieces felt right to be able to leave at the top. Was something now I reflect on, really glad to be able to do. But if I'm honest, I've still found the period and the transition difficult. And it's some of those pieces you say there is, as an athlete, things were extremely structured. You had a lot of clarity in what you were doing or what you were trying to do. You felt like you had purpose and you're able to kind of align and connect the why you're doing what you're doing and what you were trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. And you step into and maybe the other two here have stepped into coaching within sport, and maybe that's kind of bridged some of those gaps. I found sometimes still asking those questions and trying to find some of the answers. But I think then the flip side of that is there is then opportunity, isn't there? And I reflect on all those pieces that you or I had to do and everybody here had to do to be a high performer. And those skills and attributes are very valuable, and it's learning to then shift them and ultimately use them in another way.
But yeah. are you saying that coaching might be on the agenda for you?
Within sport, I don't think so. I will always stay involved in sport. For me, actually, the piece I find most interesting and have started over this last while doing work within it is actually how can you shift some of those pieces into a corporate space. You look at training, development, leadership, performance,
yeah,
into coaching as well. They're all the same skills that you're trying to develop. You're just trying to bring them into a different environment.
And tell me, that really interested in this. Do you finish sport and then not know how to exercise anymore like a normal person or how to eat like a normal person, Jason?
I don't know, it'll be interesting to see what everybody else has been like. My training has been inconsistent. And maybe I'll call my eating inconsistent as well, you know. I don't know what the rest of you think.
Yeah, no, I think it's when you're training for so long for this specific sport, I think when I go to the gym now, I'm kind of like, I'm going not really knowing what to do. I don't have a structure as such, whereas before I would have done everything in the gym for football, you know, that way. Whereas now I'm like, right, I can actually just
do what
train
I want.
To train. Like, yeah, yeah. So it's trying to get used to that. Obviously, I'm quite recent to retiring, but that's where I feel like I'm at the moment.
Yeah.
The eating, we won't talk about
that. I find, though, what generally, I don't know, again, what you think is, the habits you've created over such a long period of time that you actually just naturally take something with you.
Yeah.
Like, cause my wife would always say to me, like, I'm going on the train somewhere and I'm bringing a banana and I'm bringing me lunch, where the average person goes places and doesn't even think about food. So even though I don't think about it to the extent I do, I'm actually subconsciously constantly thinking of when I'm eating, how I'm eating.
It's
and
automatic.
Getting water. Yeah.
Well, Annelise, we haven't heard from you, and I was just fascinated to see what you're doing with cycling now. I mean, this has become a whole other thing for you, hasn't it?
It has and it hasn't. I guess I was always cycling for my general fitness training for sailing, and I always wanted to try and race, but I was never allowed in case
something would happen, or got injured.
It would look a bit stupid if you were like, oh, I can't go sailing because I'm injured from a bike race. But I was pretty disappointed after Tokyo, and I just ended up entering a bike race and I won my first race, and I got such, I guess, an adrenaline buzz out of it because it was new and exciting and something different. Mm-hmm. And yeah, over the last 3 years, I've raced quite a lot all around Ireland, meeting all these new people, like a whole sort of community of people from a different sport that I'd no idea really existed before.
And how do you look on that? Is that a hobby plus?
I think it's a hobby. I call myself a weekend warrior, but then I have all of these like expertise from years of being coached and trained to know how to train. But it is. It's a hobby that I take quite seriously. My husband cycles as well. So I guess it's something we do together. It'd really be great if he was a good sailor, because then we could just sail a lot together.
Yeah. it's been really useful, I'd say, to replace the space, you know, where very serious high level sport was occupying in your life, that you now just transfer that to cycling. Is that what it feels like?
It does, but without the pressure.
Yeah.
Like Olympic level, Paralympic level sport, there's so much pressure when you're there to perform. You're there for one reason, to try and perform well, but then in this, it's like, I love trying to perform well, but if I don't perform well...
Can you enjoy it a bit more?
I think I can enjoy it. I was racing on Sunday and I wasn't too sure if I was enjoying it. That's 50 hours a week in the office are a bit of a shock to the system when you're trying to...
Tell us what you're doing then professionally.
Yeah, so it actually took me a long time to figure out what I was going to do with myself. I retired after the Tokyo Olympics, and then I went and did an MBA in Trinity, and I thought I was going to get all the answers for what I was meant to do with my life. And I was even more confused when I finished. So I spent the last few years just literally talking to people, having coffees, trying to figure out what I wanted to do, doing lots of little jobs, seeing if I was interested in them. But I've actually ended up in an Irish software company called Sportski. It's just up in Sandyford. And I'm in an operations role, which actually really suits my sort of sailing life, where I was always organising my entire life. I was shipping my boat around the world. I was, you know, very organised with what I was doing in terms of my sport. And now I've had to sort of throw myself into that in a SaaS company. So, yeah, it's a huge change, but it's really enjoyable.
It seems to suit you.
Yeah, and a lot of learning.
That's... Yeah, I mean, it must be such a strange thing to come out of something that you've been so immersed in and then ask yourself, well, who am I now? What do I do? What do I want to do? And not being able to find the answer.
It is. It's a bit of an identity crisis.
Yeah.
It's so easy. I'm sure you can all relate. Yeah, like absolutely. When you're an athlete, it's really easy. I'm an athlete. I'm training to do this competition. It's such an easy answer. Mm-hmm. But what I found was when I retired, people were obsessed with wanting to know what I was doing with myself. And I found it really stressful because I didn't have an answer for them.
I don't know what I'm doing with
myself. And then I'd feel really bad about myself when I wouldn't have this good answer. So you'd be trying to sort of make something up on the spot. Oh yeah, I'm very busy doing stuff. In reality, I wasn't busy doing stuff. So that was, I really struggled with that.
And your mindset has to change in a lot of ways, doesn't it, Stephanie? Because we hear as well a lot about high-level athletes have to be selfish. You know, you have to be selfish because you've got to be the best of the best, and that takes a lot. So when you come out of that, do you have to change how you are with your family, with your friends? You've got a bit more time, maybe. There are more expectations of you in that regard.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny. I have Christmas presents in the back of my car from my best friend's kids that I haven't seen since Christmas, which is absolutely disgraceful. We were meant to meet yesterday and it didn't happen between both of us. She's obviously a mom, a working mom, and I obviously have my football coaching at the moment as well.
It's March now.
I know, it's really, really bad, honestly. And some of my friends and even my mom and dad, like trying to meet them for a coffee and stuff can be difficult when you're playing at a high level. But going straight into coaching has been difficult too, because I'm literally out every evening now. I have my own coaching company where we're in schools every afternoons and mornings. So I've probably less time now than I did as a player, to be honest with you. Obviously, when I worked abroad as a footballer, I had less time altogether. When I was back home playing, I probably had more time to go and see friends and do stuff. But right now, I'm probably, as I said, more busier than I ever was in terms of my evenings are all taken up. And I'm at the stage of, like what you're saying, I'm kind of like, what do I want to do? Do I want to go into coaching in a full-time role? Do I want to stick to what I'm doing in my day-to-day life, which is coaching in schools and going to clubs and doing sessions and stuff like that? And I'm kind of at a crossroads whether I want to go one way or the other. I think for the next year or so, it's going to be hectic until I kind of hit a stage where I know, right, I'm going to focus on this one or that one. So at the minute, it's quite busy, but it's trying to figure out kind of what direction or where I'm going to take things.
Yeah, probably not much change then. But
no.
Michael, you probably have people who you're coaching, who you're saying to, you've got to be selfish here. It's head down, focus on the
boxing,
sport.
Boxing is such an individual sport as well. You know, as a boxer, I was a selfish git. You know, I wanted everything done for me. You know, I wanted the pads first, I wanted the bags first, I wanted the proper sparring, the whole nine yards. Now, as a coach now, I look back at now and I go, oh, I was a right little right there, you know what I mean? But I was pushing myself to where I wanted to push myself, you know. And, you know, it's not easy, like getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and going for your runs every morning when you're not motivated. But I was motivated. I was motivated that I lost my first Olympic Games and it absolutely destroyed me. And then I just said, the only way you get back now is push yourself even harder again. I've got kids in my boxing club who are on that course, that same course as me. You have to be a selfish little git to get to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and bottom line is, you know, boxing has been so good over the last couple of years as well, and that's big thankful, you know, to the HP units and everything else that's gone on in Irish sport, and it's been very good. You know, look at the amount of medals we're winning, not just in Olympic Games,
but
winning
fantastic
World, European, and boys and girls, you know what I mean? Mm. So it's one of those things as well that as a coach, now I don't have to just look after myself. I have to look after 20 people, 30 people, 40 people when we're in the boxing gyms and Drumlin and places like that, you know? So looking after the schools, like I said, in the Dublin City Council areas as well, we're looking after them. So with that, I've become not that selfish little git anymore. I now, I'm passing on the knowledge that I have.
Yes.
You know,
that was well,
passed
you,
on to
as
me
you said,
by my father and coaches like the Mickey Hawkins of this world, you know, mm-hmm. the guys who train other clubs, but, you know, are picked as a national level. And then
you have to look after the people who
absolutely
need to
you
be
have to,
selfish
you have to
about
kind
it.
Of kind of the babysitter type thing with them now as well, because you're bringing the team away every time, you know, you have to make sure they're in bed early, particularly the boxers, they're all little messers, you know, and you have to play that father role, you know, and I do, you know, because I know how it was done for me. My father was my coach all my life. You know,
and you know all the tricks as
and
well.
I'm becoming him. That's unfortunate. That's the only thing.
Well,
I am becoming my father.
It always happens.
Yeah. Well, it's not too bad. You know, so.
Jason, for you then, I mean, do you recognise yourself in that when I say that athletes have to be very selfish, then you come out of the other side and you have to adjust and change? Is that a strange thing?
It is. I don't think people realise how selfish you have to be. And again, I just reflect. So through the end of my career, I have married and had two kids. And I think sometimes as an individual, it's very easy to be selfish.
Mm-hmm.
In a family situation, it is definitely a lot harder to do so. And I reflect on just how many decisions I would have made. Even, you know, the family were going to walk around the zoo on Saturday. I wasn't going because I was preparing to train or it would impact my recovery. So every single thought came back to, for me anyway, how would this impact my preparation, training, and then ultimately my competing? So it is a huge change. And I think the balance I know I'm trying to find and strike is, yes, you cannot be that selfish because it's just not healthy.
You won't get away with it anymore.
No, I definitely don't anymore. There's questions of was I getting away with it at times when I was. But actually is, how do you also not lose you in terms of the drive and the dedication and the commitment and everything that made you very successful in that sporting world? And to me, it's trying to find that balance that, yes, you have to be not so selfish, but yet not to lose some of those.
Yeah, well, as you said earlier, you have to find a place to transfer those skills, don't you?
Yeah.
Annalise, do you agree with that? That you're not going to change as a person. You're still going to be the one who wants to get to the top, the one who has the drive and the ambition. So where do you put that post-sport?
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. You're like, I think when you're in your sport, you're so motivated because you've ended up being good at that sport because you're passionate about it. And mm-hmm. that's what's made, maybe it's some talent as well, but it needs to be years and years of being able to sort of hone that talent and then have that motivation. And then it is trying to find how to use that motivation in the next step in life. But that is also something I learned is you can't just motivate yourself to do anything. And it is, you still need to have an interest in it and want to do it.
Got to be passionate about it, right?
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. like, you're not just someone's like, oh, you're very motivated, you can do anything. And I'm like, well, if I'm not interested in it, I'm actually the least motivated person ever.
Yeah, well, that's the other side of it.
So,
Cian from Leitrim says, I played club football in Leitrim. It's the camaraderie and the team environment that I miss the most. Even though, Stephanie, you're involved in coaching and you're really busy and you're working with kids and all the rest and some of your teammates as well, do you miss that?
Yeah, I think that's probably the one thing that everyone I spoke to about when I was thinking about retiring, that was the one thing that people say to hold on to while you're there, because being in a dressing room with people that I don't want to put it into too serious of a content, but you're going into battle with nearly, you know, that way. Yeah. You're all together. You have that kind of camaraderie, particularly in the Irish teams over the years. You know, I think we always had a good group there who always looked out for each other. So that when I finished playing international, which was probably a while before I finished at club, that was one of the things I really missed. And I think the older I got, and I don't know if you guys can relate to this, within a dressing room or within kind of your boxing club, I was one of the older ones, and there were 16 and 17 year olds coming up. So you kind of lost that connection a little bit anyway. You know, as I got older, I was kind of like, there'd be me, and last year in the dressing room, there was probably only me and Anya who were kind of around the same age, and the rest of the girls were like all quite young. So that was probably another factor in where I was like, right, maybe it's time to move on. You know, I'm not connecting with these players as much as I would have previously.
Makes it a bit easier.
Yeah, it did. But it is, even now being involved in coaching, like, we go into the coaching dressing room and you still have that little bit of kind of a bit of banter and stuff flying around, which is nice to be around. But throughout my career, definitely the dressing rooms that I shared were really good experiences.
Do you remember that, Michael, when you were 30 as a boxer and you were making your decision to go, that you were looking around you and they were all 16?
Yeah, and listen, it was an easy answer for me to retire. You know, I've done, boxing's not an easy sport. You know, you're getting thumped all the time. So with that, it was easy for me to retire. I was ready to retire. You know, and that's the most important thing, you know. And I never went back, which is the best part as well. You know, some people,
give it another go.
A year or two and I'll give it another go. I never done that, you know. So with that as well, you know, all of us here now think we're great coaches. You know, I think we might be great coaches, you know what I mean? But we don't necessarily have to be great coaches. You know, I'm not saying not be great coaches, but we're going to try to be great coaches. But the bottom line, it doesn't give us a God-given right to be a great coach, because we're great athletes, you know. And with that, we have to put the work in as much as any other coach does, you know, and if not more.
Listen, I have a message from Teresa in Dublin, which I really want to bring you. I knew Michael Carruth's mother and father in the late 60s and early 70s. They were a complete lady and gentleman. As a couple, they did so much to raise the sporting profile of the new estate of Greenhills. Michael, you brought us much joy and we're very proud of you. Isn't that lovely to hear?
Oh, good. Thanks very much. Yeah.
Tell us a bit more about your dad.
My dad was, my dad was probably 100 years before his time. You know, he had me doing plyometrics when I was 16 years old. You know, he had me doing weight training when I was 16 years old. And everybody was looking at him and saying, "What are you doing, Austin?" He says, "I'm making him stronger." He says, you know, but what he wasn't making me muscle bound. He was making me, I could throw middleweights around at 9 stone. Mm-hmm. That was my weight category at the start of my career, you know. He brought a great belief in me as well, that, you know, he knew that once I done my training, I could beat anybody.
But he was probably following your lead and what you wanted to do rather than, say, pushing you.
Exactly.
That's what it sounds like to me.
And like, let's go to the Olympic final. Like, both my hands were broken in the Olympics, okay? And we had to tell my ma that day, you know. And my dad made a phone call to my mom and yapping away, and
your son's says, hands are
broken.
By the
way, he says, "Michael has something to tell you." And I looked at him and I went, you can imagine what I said about it, right? So I said, "Mom, listen, I'm going to tell you something and you're not going to like it." And she said, "What's that, Michael?" I said, "Both my hands are broke." And there was this one eerie silence. And then she says, "Michael, put your dad back on the phone." And I said, "No, Mom, love you." I said, "Today's my day." I said, "I'll talk to you later."
Right,
home.
I'm gone.
I had to hang up on her because she couldn't ring back, you know. And I said to him, "You're in trouble." And he goes, "You wouldn't mind getting me over, would you?" I said, "I'll try my level best," I said, you know.
Yeah, well, the gold, listen, compensated for the broken hands.
That was it. But, you know, but when you look at parents in sport as well, you know, the amount of time that my dad put into me.
Yes.
You know, and my brothers, you know, in the boxing, not just us, everyone that he was ever involved in boxing, the amount of time that puts in, you know, it's phenomenal. And only I know now, becoming the head coach of Drimnagh Boxing Club, the effort that you have to put in to, you know, to maintain that level that we have in Drimnagh. You know, we have a great team in Drimnagh at the moment. We're going away to Pittsburgh in a few weeks' time as well, so it's going to be a good one as well. So with that, it's you have to listen to people who know coaching better than you and learn from them, you know, and make you better.
Good advice. And listen, we have to leave it there, but I'm just so delighted to have you all in. Such a treat. Thank you very much for being with us. Jason Smith, Stephanie Zambra, Michael Carruth and Annalise Murphy. Great to have you here. We'll take a break back after
Get
this.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.